liver and smashed her wrist. Bored with life, didn't succeed. Thank the Lord.
Hello and welcome to Radio Freethinker on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your freethinking historian.
And this is Don, the philosopher, political science guy.
And this is Rob, cognitive psychologist and amateur geocacher.
That's a thing, okay.
That's yes. Interesting. I like to start out...
That one's actually true. I think we have to mention one thing. Just recently, it was James Randi's 82nd birthday. So happy birthday, James Randi, and get well soon.
Our first guest, we were very pleased to have him on the show.
We should also point out, get well soon. I understand he's having surgery or something.
Yes, he's has some medical problems, but he will fight through it because he's an escape artist.
Science willing.
Yes, indeed. This is our death and murder special. So to get things started off, I found a couple of news stories, local and otherwise. Here, right at UBC, as local as we can get, really, biophysics scientists here at UBC have found a new way to extract diluted and contaminated DNA. I'm quoting from the article that UBC press releases gave out. By exploiting the physical traits of DNA, electric charge, length, and flexibility, we've been able to extract DNA from samples that would otherwise not produce enough clean DNA from analysis. The technique is being commercialized through Boreal Genomics, a UBC spin-off company. It's got broad applications, and it's already been tested successfully on samples from RCMP and on tar pit samples from Alberta.
So, are they going to bring dinosaurs back to life?
I hope so.
Wow.
I'm also curious, sorry, just to throw in my two bits, and I'm sure UBC is a wonderful place for this, but how much money goes back to UBC from the spinoff company for the research done here at the...
I'm assuming that a large enough sum that it's worth giving them the research rights, but I wouldn't know.
A topic for another time.
Yes. Speaking of more death and murder, here's an article about the cancer-fighting properties of green tea. A large study has just been finished, a review of many studies, I think over 48 that were mostly done in Asia, where consumption of green tea is way higher than anywhere else.
I drink a lot of green tea, so I have nothing to worry about now, right?
Well, actually, the anti-cancer benefits of green tea, which are heavily advertised by most green tea retailers, are actually minimal to none. There is some problems with the studies that have mostly been done. The article actually mentions that only one of the studies, a study of prostate cancer risk, was a randomized controlled double-blinded trial. All the others had problems with the way they were done. So more studies need to be done, but from the review they've done, there was little to no help. And one final story, a little weird thing. Researchers have found mammal-eating plants in the Philippines. It's a new species of giant pitcher plant discovered in the highlands of the Philippines, and it eats large insects and rodents, including rats.
Rumor has it that one of the researchers fell in and, well... That's the end of him? Is it that big? How big is big?
I'm not quite sure how big is big, but they eat rats, so they're large enough for rats to get into.
Pretty big, then, I suppose.
Yeah, pretty big. And you could probably plant a few of these in your backyard to get rid of pests and, you know, the local
cat. Maybe a small cat or something, yeah.
As soon as it starts singing show tunes and talking about killing the local dentist, you should probably get rid of it. Well, feed me, Seema.
Yes, Little Shop of Horrors reference number 433.
This is our death episode, but I thought we should have some good news. And one piece of good news is that Skeptics in the Pub is meeting on Tuesday, August 18th at 7:30 at the Railway Club.
That's 1 week from now.
We always go to Skeptics in the Pub. It's always a great time, so please come out.
I might point out, for those people who have show ideas or anything that they think is interesting, again, we'll be there, so come
up. Yeah, definitely.
Punch us down and say, hey, we've got something you should know.
And if you can't be there, please email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
And speaking of emails, we got a fair bit of very complimentary emails regarding our first hour-long show last week.
Yes, thank you everyone who sent in an email.
I think almost twice as much mail as we normally get.
That's right.
True.
Yeah, we got quite a bit. So, thank you.
That's two emails. Normally we get maybe one a week if we're lucky that we got two emails this week.
This is why he doesn't do politics.
Yeah,
I pay too much attention to statistics. I'm sorry.
Well, anyway, thanks to our listeners. We appreciate it. And we
all
hope
two
to
of
do.
You.
We hope to do more in the future. Well, before we get to the dark stuff, why don't we go to a quick commercial break, and we'll come back and discuss some really scary things.
Bom, bom, bom.
Hey, this is Clem from White Cowbell, Oklahoma. Baby, don't touch that dial, because you got it locked on C-I-T-R.
Welcome back. Okay, so our first death story is about honor killings. Now, I'm sure most Canadians have heard about the recent news from the four women who were murdered from Montreal. The belief in that case is that it was an honor killing. And the particulars of the case are there was four women. One of them was a mother. The three of them were daughters of this woman. And they were found in a car in, I believe, a ditch or a river. Initially, it was believed perhaps to be suicide, but it was later police have arrested the husband of the daughters and ex-husband of the mother, along with his son and his current wife. It's believed that this was a case of honor killing.
Honor killing? What's an honor killing?
Well done. Honor killing is a form of murder in which someone, usually a woman, has brought some sort of shame on her family or husband. And this shame could be anything from adultery to refusing to wear certain clothes. And they're usually killed for this. Now, honor killings are not religious in nature.
It's pretty harsh, harsh sentence.
They're not inherently religious in nature. Although, in the Montreal case, the victims and the accused are Muslim. It, as a phenomenon, it's more cultural. It doesn't necessarily follow religion, although in most cases it is defended maybe either overtly or passively by religious dogma.
So you're sort of saying that, you know, religion isn't so much something written in stone, but something that adapts to the culture that it finds itself in.
Exactly. This is practiced all over the world. This is the Middle East, Asia, India, parts of Africa. I mean, it's happened in North America.
I think we've all heard of people committing suicide in Japan for saving face and honor, like harakiri, that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, this is more, though, focusing on the actual, like, murdering someone else as opposed to ritualistic suicide.
Yeah, a little harsher, I think.
It is, yeah, it's very harsh. Now, I was saying that it's often protected by religious dogma, and it can either be overt, as in you have a religious leader actually advocating it, or it can be done passively by creating a second tier of person that represses women. Now,
do you mean a religious leader advocating it, like issuing a fatwa?
That can be one way. It can be set in to law by religious officials.
Sort of like Sati in India, where, you know, when the husband dies, the wife gets thrown onto the pyre by, quote unquote, the community.
Yeah, it can be sort of written down as like communal law. Again, oftentimes in these situations, you have religious leaders acting as political leaders, vice versa. It tends to get enshrined and
sort of a tradition that's...
Yeah, tradition that's almost law is a good way of thinking of it. And then the passive way is it just becomes part of the culture of repressing women. And that's pretty much every religion on the planet does
what?
That.
No, religion's supposed to be liberating. It's supposed to be your salvation. It can't cause some people to be subjugated to other
I'm not even sure it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, it's just one of those things that I think skeptics have to remain vigilant. There you go. That dogma does not become unchallenged. And we need to make a concerted effort to keep our political and legal system 100% secular.
And skeptic. I only point that out because dealing with sexism, everyone knows that I'm somewhat, well, very left of center. And you had very similar sexist ideas occur in the Soviet Union. Now, of course, Stalinism and all that was just as dogmatic as a lot of religions are. So I think, again, this is where secularism can benefit from skepticism, which is the main point of our point of being here.
That's a good point. I'm saying here that, you know, religious dogma often protects honor killings, but it's true. It doesn't have to be religious. It can be any kind of
The
fanatical.
Point here is question fanatical and ridiculous traditions and laws and anything that is clearly not based in reason.
Yeah. That's the main goal.
I.e. killing someone because they have brought shame upon your family.
Exactly.
But of course, I don't know, killing people for specific purposes might be justified under the right circumstances.
More on that later.
Right. Well, Don, why don't you give us a bit more information on religious killing, or perhaps death as a result of religious action?
Sure.
Yeah, I think you got some notes on this earlier.
Well, on a related topic, I was doing a thing called Prayed to Death. A guy named Dale Newman and his wife were found guilty of second-degree reckless homicide in the death of their 11-year-old daughter, who died of untreated diabetes. Newman, who was once studied to be a Pentecostal minister, and anyone who's done any research on the Pentecostals will know that they're one of the more out there type religions, fundamentalist maybe, but definitely they believe in speaking in tongues or whatever. But he believed that God would heal his daughter, and that it was promised in the Bible. He says, and I quote, "If I go to the doctor, I am putting the doctor before God. I am not believing in what he, God, said he would do." Essentially, Madeline died as a test of faith. I mean, his wife, both of them were convicted, but when I was doing research for this, I found out a lot of other interesting facts. Actually, one of the things I found interesting is the jury took over 15 hours over a couple of days to come up with their conviction. And I was sitting there to myself, I'm saying, well, why would there be any doubt? I mean, his daughter was dying, he refused to take her. But I found another guy named Carl Brent Worthington, who was also charged with a similar type crime, but his was actually was a misdemeanor. His daughter, who was suffering from pneumonia and died from a related blood infection, he got 60 days in jail and was told by the court that if his children are sick, he has to take them to the doctor. He believed to a place called the Followers of the Christ Church in Oregon City. Now, apparently, in many, many states, there is a clause that basically says that for religious beliefs, charges of manslaughter, homicide, and child abuse can't be applied. So essentially...
No, so this is why in one case, the parents only got convicted of neglect and one person actually went to jail.
Exactly. There was a difference. And why it took them a while, because in the United States, unlike in Canada, where we've had similar cases, and both of them have been said, listen, religion is not an excuse to abuse your children. It's not an excuse to kill someone. But apparently, in over 30 states, there are laws on the books that say, religion provide you an exemption from what normally would be considered to be immutable laws of child protection. Again, manslaughter, you kill someone. Ironically enough, Texas doesn't have one of these laws, which is why, if people remember back about a year or so ago, there was a big thing about a Mormon community that had a bunch of their children taken away for suspected child abuse.
Yeah.
If that had happened in a state like New Jersey, Ohio, Wyoming, yada yada, then they could say, listen, it's part of our religious practices, you can't touch us.
So
it's kind of creepy.
It sounds like honor killings could easily happen in the United States and be protected under law.
Yes, actually, I think the only thing that would prevent honor killings from being legal in the United States is the cultural bias, because honor killings aren't considered to be a Christian ethic.
At least anymore.
This has reminded me of some stories a couple months ago of parents who, it wasn't religiously motivated, but instead of going to real doctors, they would treat their children with things like acupuncture or homeopathy. Actually, there's a story here. I'm just going to quote it. I'm not sure where this was, but the parents of a 9-month-old girl who died of septicemia were responsible for their baby's death because they shunned conventional medical treatment for her eczema in favor of homeopathic remedies, a court heard. This is actually...
I think that's in Australia.
Yeah.
I seem to recall hearing that.
Yeah, this is a homeopath, Thomas Sam, and it's in New South Wales. Yes, it was in Australia. The Supreme Court charged them with manslaughter by gross criminal negligence because they essentially killed this baby girl through neglect, through not treating her with actual medical treatment.
I think the thing that scares me the most about this is the ability to abuse these laws. I mean, it's already, the laws are objectionable to begin with, but you can essentially get away with murder, even if it's, you can intentionally allow someone to die and be like, oh, well, it's part of my religion. I wish I could have done something, but...
Well, no, and that's the funny thing. I mean, these laws make specific... I mean, they say specifically, faith healing, prayer as treatment, as viable alternatives to medical treatment. I was mentioning before, the followers of the Christ Church in Oregon, the former medical examiner there believes that over the past 10 years, over 25 children have perished because of this inattentiveness. Children who could have normally been saved by things as simple as antibiotics, and who died because... it was, you know, we'll put it into God's hands and God will heal us. You know, again, I can't help but think about how better off we are in some respects in Canada than we are in the United States. I mean, one, these laws don't apply in Canada. In Canada, if you sit there and you say you don't, at least you have to go to the Supreme Court, hopefully, knock on wood, that it'll never be overturned. But, I mean, we even had that case in Winnipeg. We mentioned a few shows back about the neo-Nazis who are raising their children. You know, that parents don't own their children. They are not property of the parents. They are property of society, and we all have to take responsibility for it.
Though I still think here that people like, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses can elect not to go through blood transfusions.
Well, they can't speak for their children. Because there was another case, and again, I think in Alberta, for some reason, Alberta seems to be the most American-like province in this country. Who knows that why?
Cowboy hats and oil.
But I believe there was a 13-year-old girl or whatever who refused a blood transfusion. She didn't want it. Her family didn't want it because they were Jehovah's Witnesses. And the state stepped in and said, listen, you know.
You mean the province?
The province stated, thank you.
The state in terms of, you know, the man.
Yes. Yeah. The society stepped in and said, listen, you know, you are part of the society, and whether you know it or not, this is good for you until you become a legal entity, an adult. Then you can make your own decisions to a point.
Right. Well, I mean, I think in Canada we're also a bit lucky that we're not too crazy about religious, I guess you could say religious libertarianism almost. This sense that I can worship any way I want, and if it kills somebody, that's too bad.
Yeah, that's something that we tend to be a rather more moderate nation. Although that's not to say that there aren't a little strange, like, religious libertarian, I put that in quotations.
No, there are pockets. I mean,
yeah, in Alberta, actually, again in Alberta, there is a group of, I totally forget, like, what sect of a religion it was, but they believe that no one should have a photograph of them. They refuse to have photographs taken of them willingly. They aren't allowed to by their religion and their beliefs. And they were recently asked by the local law enforcement agencies or the government or something like that to have ID, picture ID, to carry it, because if they wanted to drive to town to get some food, they were supposed to have a picture ID and driver's license, and they refused. And they were trying to get an exemption for having a picture ID license based on it being against their religion. I'm not sure how that case went, but it's not to say that Canada doesn't have its own strangeness in this regard.
No, I think me and Ethan were talking the other day about, you know, what is Canadianism? And I mean, we suffer a lot from cultural imperialism from the States, especially since the advent of cable and satellite TV. But I mean, there are some things that are fundamentally different, and Canadians are far more, I think, communally based, not necessarily communist, but communally based. And
we're all pinko commies. Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, but it comes out in things like this, you know, that we believe in. We do not believe in the freedom of the individual. We believe more in good governance. You know, we believe in a happy, peaceful society.
We believe that, you know, your religion should not allow you to murder people with impunity.
Whether that's intentional murder, as in this case, or passive murder, as in letting your child die from a curable disease. Well, why don't we take a commercial break, and we'll come back with some more
just to let you breathe a little and
topics.
We'll come back to the big ones.
Please don't die during the break.
Good words.
Remember when you first learned about the birds and the bees? Want to learn more about the birds and the bees and the berries, urban agriculture, delicious homegrown food, solar energy, and much more? Check out the Society Promoting Environmental Conservation. Come to one of our workshops, join our solar panel tour, or go to our website, www.spec.bc.ca, for more information.
Welcome back to Radio Free Thinker. So, Don, what fun topic do we have up next?
Ooh, now we've got the exciting and totally uncontroversial topic of abortion.
And
capital punishment.
Both together.
Now,
like chocolate and peanut butter.
Now, a lot of you were sitting there saying, and my cohort said, Don, when you came up with this idea, oh my God, there's so much material to go in here. And I agree. So really, the idea of this here is to explore what can appear to be, and maybe is, a logical contradiction between the people who approve of abortion on the one hand, but decry capital punishment on the other.
Or on the other side, people who are in favor of capital punishment, but decry abortionists.
Right, the idea of, you know, how can you be in for the preservation of life on the one hand, but then again believe in its expunction on the other. There appears to be a logical contradiction.
Or at least certainly some sort of hypocrisy.
Now, for the sake of this talk, and as rational thinkers, I think all of us are listening, or hopefully soon will be, I'm going to acknowledge right off at the beginning in the non-existence of the soul. Now, So we're not going to mention it if you believe in souls or religion or whatever and use that as a basis as what qualifies as a valid life. This is not what
we're just making
about.
The assumption right now that when someone dies, that's it. They do not live on in any other way.
However, on that topic and dealing specifically with abortion, we have to acknowledge that at some point with a fetus, at some point the bundle of cells attain a sense of personhood. And that at that point, it becomes a contentious issue is when do we allow abortions? Should we allow abortions? How do we justify that? Now, the first area that I was going to cover is the idea of personhood. Personhood is one of the more interesting ones because, I mean,
what counts as a person?
When do you have a person? And do you get rights as a person? I mean, some people sit there and figure, you know, as soon as you can take the bundle of cells and shove it into a petri dish or whatever have you, and if it can survive independent of the mother, then it's viable. Other people use the idea of consciousness, that if it has certain levels of consciousness, then it's a viable life.
Just from my background as a cognitive psychologist, identifying something as a person by whether it has consciousness or not is really sticky, considering that we don't know what consciousness is.
Well, no, and even with a lot of the basic, you know, ideas of temporal awareness and identity of self, really, because of the unique, well, not unique nature, but of the nature of human gestation, we wouldn't really be persons until about a year or so after we're born.
And depending on how you wanted to define it. It's too vague.
Some, like, animals would be counting as persons at this point, too.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you go, well, what about people who have diminished capacities later in life? You know, people who
There was a whole debate. I mean, that's related to what we want to talk about here. Terry Schiavo, I mean, she was basically a vegetable hooked up to a breathing machine. And people were decrying, you know, oh, you can't shut off the machine. That'd be murdering someone. And I'm like, is she really alive? Is she still a person?
So obviously there's a controversy here with when is it okay to have an abortion?
When is it okay to kill someone?
Well, that's the next question.
Does abortion even count as killing someone?
Well, yeah, no, and actually, and I think there are some things, it comes into another area.
We expect many emails about this.
A lot of us would sit there, and almost universally, even when you do surveys of even some of the most conservative United States, they sit there and say, if the mother or the child's life is at stake, well, the mother's life, because I guess the child's going to lose its life, but if the mother's life is at stake, abortion is almost accepted universally. It says, yes, you have a right to do that.
Although, conservative fundamentalists, religious people tend not to agree.
Even in states like Alabama and all that, right? A majority still think it's okay. Smaller majority than you'd get in other places because they are foreign. But then you also get things like psychological reasons, right? So let's say the woman was raped. Are you going to force it, right? Well, then you get some people who say, well, maybe then, maybe not. And then you've got economic reasons. So if you are going to have a child and you can't afford to raise the child and no one else will raise the child, is abortion okay then? And that's where we start getting into this slippery slope. What about for gender selection? What about if you've got a daughter and you want to have a son? So, and the last one is, what about just for the idea of birth control? People who are just lazy to take the pill or use a condom. So the point being here is that, abortion, do you believe in...
It's a multifaceted topic.
Right. So you have that idea, and then let's compare that now with the idea of capital punishment. So is it appropriate to kill someone to show people that killing people is wrong? And again, on the one hand, a lot of people say, oh yes, capital punishment is wrong outright. You shouldn't murder people to show murdering people is wrong. But then you have the things, well, what if it was Hitler? Right? A lot of people say, well, okay.
Would you go back in time and abort Hitler?
Yeah. Right. Well, there's also the question of redemption. Is our legal system about reforming people or about punishing people? Well, there's perfectly valid arguments on both sides of that coin, right?
But the system doesn't appear to have chosen one way or the other. It just picks and chooses whichever one it wants.
Well, I think that the system has a way, but it's not like built in. It just does it on its own by the way we administer justice.
But yeah, but so that goes to the thing. So you used rehabilitation. I termed it as retribution versus restitution. So let's say we don't care about the person in and of themselves, right? Like a fetus, we've said this person has no rights inherent. Mm-hmm. Because of the crime they've committed. But then you have to sit there and say, well, are we just killing them to I'm mad and I want to get out? Or do we want something like restitution? You have denied society whatever this person you killed would have given to society, so you should somehow try and make up for that.
It's a philosophical debate and a very interesting one. The question that I think a lot of that we're kind of asking here, though, is there a conflict between being pro-choice, anti-capital punishment, vice versa?
I think one of the greatest examples of that was the killing we had earlier this year with the abortion
George
doctor.
Tiller.
Yeah, yeah, the
late-term abortion doctor, which again puts it into morally ambiguous area. But.
So it was a guy that was very pro-life, and he, I believe, gunned down this doctor, this late-term abortion doctor, outside of a church. And this has started much debate over the...
Well, there you have. As Ethan was pointing out, right? You have someone who says, listen, killing babies is wrong and we shouldn't do it. So I'm going to kill this guy to show you that killing is wrong. And
well, that's kind of what we're getting at too, isn't it? This is a serious issue that requires, I think, some intense skeptical thought.
Well, and just the idea of is there a logical contradiction to believing in one and not the other?
I was thinking about this a little earlier when I found out this was a topic for the show, and I was thinking, what if the system that people who believe in both is that everyone has a right to live until they murder someone. Then all bets are off. You can kill them. And there you go. You have a system, whether it's reasonable or not, but it's certainly logically consistent. I'm not sure that there's a logical contradiction between believing that fetuses have the right to live and murderers do not. I think the idea here is whether it is reasonable to kill people because they have killed, or whether it is reasonable to believe that a fetus does not have the right to live.
True. Well, and you also have the idea of potential life versus
actualized life. Yeah.
Well, again, fascinating stuff. I'm sure our listeners have an opinion on this, so please let us know at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. And we're out of time, so Don, can you give us a quote?
Sure. This is from Sherlock Holmes in The Sign of Four.
And it's not related to death and murder.
When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. I think there's a corollary to that. Whatever is impossible, however desirable, must be eliminated.
Very good. Well, I am Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don, saying eyes open, minds on.
This is Rob, reminding you that tonight is the height of the Perseid meteor shower, so when it's evening and the night sky is clear, look up and imagine they're somewhere else.
All right, well then, so long, everybody.
Bye.
Big government and big pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy, in which secret government contracts are sold to Big Pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so Big Pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out...